officially episode 4 of the Motorific podcast. I'm Christy Farrell. We have Joanne Don, and we're in studio together this weekend in San Francisco.
My kitchen. Also known as my kitchen. No one has to know.
A rare dual appearance of the both of us. So sound is probably going to be perfect this episode. Maybe I have to go back and retweak for future episodes.
Let's hope so. So today I'm a little tired. I probably sound really tired. Not only because I didn't sleep very well, probably because I was really excited about this day. But we got to borrow 2 amazing bikes, each in their own way, very special in their own way. 2 very different bikes as well. We borrowed a KTM, a 2013 690 Duke, which as of right now is, I don't think you can buy one because dealers haven't gotten, I don't think they've gotten any to sell yet. At least with Scuderia, they haven't. We borrowed the demo Duke, and then we also borrowed the demo Brahmo Impulse R for a little bit. And those you can get. You can get one right now, actually. And so we rode around the city and took all kinds of hot photos, which we'll post and we'll share with you. It'll be on our Facebook. It'll be on the website, too. Probably for the post for this show as well. So you can let us know what you think. But it was awesome. I mean, I don't know. It's the only word I can think of to describe my experience. Oh, I mostly rode the Brahmo, except for like 1 mile, I think, 2 miles. I rode the Brahmo and Christy rode the Duke. So how'd you like the Duke?
Well, my first thought was my feet can't possibly touch the ground because it's a KTM.
Whatever.
And that's with a 34-inch inseam. My feet have never been able to touch the ground on any KTM. So I was quite impressed to know that on this particular 690 Duke model that they've lowered the seat height to 33 inches.
See, even coming from a tall person, that is a horrible excuse because even I can ride the 990 Super Duke, which is taller, believe it or not.
Sure.
Than this 690 Duke.
I'm going to go ahead and say that you have more years under your belt, so you're more comfortable doing that. You might even have had to accommodate it yourself because not very many bikes you can put both feet down. So for me, it's a comfort level that can only come with experience. And
very true.
I only speak for myself, but I'm pretty sure that the feeling is somewhat mutual with other people.
I see. I don't think you could see me because when you were on the left side of me, I don't think you saw, like, while I was parking my own bike on my SV, that my right foot is just hanging. It's not even anywhere near the ground because for me to get enough left foot down to park my bike on while I'm sitting on it, my right foot is totally useless. It's just hanging. And I can't get both down comfortably enough to be stable. So it's easier for me to actually use the rear brake a little bit and then use just my left foot to back up and park. And it sounds really weird, but it's the only way I can make it work.
So I can say comfortably that between the Brahmo Impulse R and the KTM 690 Duke, that this 34-inch inseam could put both of her feet well on the ground. So thumbs up to KTM for dropping the seat height just a little bit there. But very impressed. So first of all, wow. Also very lightweight. I was not expecting... I've never ridden any kind of supermoto. The styles of bike that I've ridden are probably limited to cruiser and enduro. So it was kind of impressive to me. But 329 pounds dry weight on the 690 Duke,
and
single cylinder.
How much gas does that take?
4 liters. So
let's put that in the computer.
Yeah. Do the math. KTM USA, shame on you for dropping everything into
Wait.
Millimeters, kilograms, and
are
liters.
Are you sure? 4 liters?
Oh, 14 liters.
Oh, my God. That's only a gallon. Oh, no. 3.6.
14.
3.7 gallons. So a little over 3.5. And your mileage on it's probably like, I don't know, I'd have to guess like 30s on that because it's a single Maybe highway you'd get a little bit better, but I'm going to guess you probably only got like 29 or 30.
Yeah, so generally I enjoyed actually too much, in fact. The 690 Duke did not like low speeds, definitely wanted to race. Very, very twitchy in first and second gear.
Doesn't want to race. Just
definitely doesn't want to sit in traffic, that's for sure.
Doesn't want to sit in traffic and really, really, really wants to get out on the highway.
It's a bike that you really want to open up on the highway, which fortunately we were able to do with both the Bramall Impulse and the KTM Duke.
Yeah, it wants to definitely open up at higher speed. It doesn't want to go straight, that's for sure, though. It really wants... Like, I wish we could have gone out to, like... down to Alice's or down to some really nice twisty roads, because that's where it's really, really happy.
Yeah, strong suit.
Mm-hmm. And so it, you know, supermotos in general are not popular, as popular in other parts of the country. Like here, they're crazy popular. People race them, people mod them.
Yeah.
They love riding them in general. It's a really, I'd say the supermoto is the San Francisco bike.
And this would be the, by definition, naked supermoto, but very, very nimble, very lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of the first bikes, other than a cruiser, which, for me, sitting on it, I was not overwhelmed by any kind of gas tank in front of me as opposed to beneath the seat, which is what I'm accustomed to. So automatically my default is, oh, God, you know, how's the full gas tank? Is that going to throw me off?
Oh.
Not a single problem. That bike was really light, very easy, good turning. You know, I had no complaints whatsoever.
It also has ABS. Did you feel that? Use it at all?
No. I mean, it's standard is on. You'd have to turn it off if it's possible to turn it off.
I don't think you can turn it off.
Certain bikes you can. BMW, you can turn off the ABS.
I think it would be nice if that...
Oh, and don't forget the front and rear Brembo brakes. Very very slick on that as well. But, you know, had it not have been a little twitchy, a little more... had it been a little less high performance, which you obviously don't necessarily want that, I would definitely recommend that as a first bike. I think that you could learn off of it, but your throttle control and your speed, like we talked about before, might be a little difficult learning on that bike in particular.
It could for the right person,
yeah.
I think, but not everybody.
Yeah.
And that's not what they're trying to get.
No, not at all.
But sure, it could work. It just depends on the person. But it has a lot of power in first and second gear even. So, but good news is the 390 Duke is coming. And that's 2014 model, so we'll actually be able to see those hopefully on the street in demo form maybe the end of this year.
Have any idea on the top speed on those?
Well, it'll be a 390. I'm going to guess it's got to at least go up to 85, 95, 100. Like it's, I mean, the Ninja 300 is...
That would be great.
Is a...
If it did, because that would be... The 690 has a pretty decent price point. It's $8,995. The 390 would probably have a smaller price point, which I anticipate would be a pretty damn good deal.
So the reason they're releasing the 390 is to try and compete in the beginner market and to compete with the Ninja 300s, the CBR 250s, even the 500, like the new Honda 500s. Let me see. Now, Europe already has, and other countries already have, a 390 Duke. So it looks like this guy is going to, again, with millimeters and kilograms.
Yeah. Well, while Joanne's doing the translating, I can say that, you know, overall, the experience on the KTM today was a vibrating single cylinder, throaty goodness all around.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be 300 pounds dry. And
so another 30 pounds lighter.
Yep. And the seat height
should also be around 32.
It'll probably be 31.
Oh, wow. And drop it even more.
Yeah, 31.5, which is sensible for a beginner bike. When I talked to these stats are based off
Euro.
It's based off the US KTM site, actually. And the specs are just, I think, copied from the European versions. when I talked to the KTM rep and asked him about the power band and the price point, he said they were going to, again, try really hard to compete with the beginner bike market, say a Ninja 250 at price wise. So it's going to be priced really well. It's going to have more power than a Ninja 250. It sounds like its horsepower is going to peak closer to like 50 or 40s maybe, which is awesome.
Yeah. Great upright position too, which will change a little bit.
Which
if
is
you're,
awesome.
You know, for the Ninja, you're obviously in a slightly different, more sporty position.
Yeah. And I personally am a huge fan of a standard riding position, whether it's on a Bonneville or, you know, a standard, a Nighthawk or a Supermoto. There's just something about a fully upright riding position, I think, as a beginner, or as just someone trying to learn how to ride, that it encourages, I think, a little bit more, I don't know, not risk-taking, but like...
just easy, comfortable.
Input. It's definitely easy and comfortable, but it's a different riding experience. And I think maybe because it's a more familiar riding position that...
people ride bicycles that way.
Yeah.
You're sitting upright. I mean, you spend most of your day in that general position, so I would think that would be something that would be fairly...
yeah, and I think because the riding position itself is so familiar, mm-hmm. that immediately I think that will instill a little bit of confidence,
exactly.
in somebody, just like, oh, this is totally familiar. This feels really good and natural, and I think that alone can make someone feel better about riding, just by feeling better physically on the bike. So I think it's going to be awesome. I cannot wait to ride it. I'm so excited. And I'm so excited to be able to offer somebody who walks into our shop and be like, well, you know what? 690 Duke may be too much, but the 390 will be perfect. And you're going to love it. And you can't... it's impossible to sit on that bike, go around the block, and not be grinning ear to ear. And the only people I've ever met that can say that are people who've never ridden one. Because you just don't know until you get on it. And mm-hmm. you just... as soon as you get on it, it's impossible to not be happy. It's like, you know, it's just awesome. So that was really fun. And but toward the end of our afternoon or our 3 hours together, we switched up a little bit. So I rode the Impulse R pretty much the whole time. It's a little shorter. It's about an inch and a half or so shorter than the Duke. Mm. Weighs more. It's like 400 because of the batteries, but it's all really low. It felt great because there's no gas tank. It's just a tiny little skinny thing between your knees and between your hands. And so
it looks like a straight four.
It does, but it's,
but those are batteries.
They're batteries.
Not pistons.
So even though it's heavier, you only really feel that weight when you have to park it.
Yeah.
It's not top heavy, so it makes it really easy to manage the weight.
I couldn't tell. Although getting from the right turn position that we were in and starting was kind of like, my first experience on this bike turning the throttle is going to be going around a corner. This can be fun. So I was pretty glad that there was no one else.
It.
No one else around.
Obviously you handled it. but I personally love that. I fell in love. I would rather.
And
have
I like that riding position as well. That's not too much different than upright. Slightly forward.
It's like a few degrees or something.
Yeah.
Like
manageable, even on like long distance, because yeah. A couple people I used to ride with were more downward.
Although,
and that became difficult after a couple of hours because a lot of the wear and tear is going into your elbows when you're riding mm-hmm. like this and you're supporting yourself. So it didn't make it comfortable for them. But I think in this one, I could take this one for as far as the batteries will take.
See,
it.
See, I couldn't.
Charge.
That's the thing, is I don't think I could tour on this bike. And the reason why is because it has a shorter knee to what I call knee to hip ratio. My knees are bent really high. It's kind of a race peg position because mm-hmm. it feels just like the SV. And you didn't sit on my bike, did you? The pegs are really high. And so it makes me crouch more, and then it makes my hip and my groin hurt, ache a little bit because it's all compacted. It's too short. I think I would, not short in height, but just the travel space between knee and hip. It's a little bit, for me, it was too much because of the pain I already have. If I didn't have this injury, you know, and this lingering pain, I probably would be fine.
Well, what about if they added another inch on the seat?
Well, then that would make it a little bit taller, which I wouldn't want that, I guess. I mean...
Well, you were fine with the Duke, though.
I was fine with the Duke, but it certainly is nice, you know. It's a nice convenience thing. But yeah, I think if it had maybe a half inch more, it could be even just the positions of the pegs. Because you can adjust those on a lot of bikes. So for me, that was the only problem. That's the only thing that I had a problem with it. If you're not familiar with Brahmo, they're based in Oregon. And they're one of two companies offering consumer electric motorcycles, meaning motorcycles you can actually buy from a dealership. Brahmo right now is racing the Impulse in the TTX GP series, which is like the national electric race bike series. And it is a race bike. It's got 100 mile an hour top speed.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with San Francisco traffic on the 101, I was only able to break it up to 75 miles per hour before I had to stop.
Only.
It was very sad. I'm not usually one to advertise that I want to speed, mm-hmm. but this bike just said, you need to open me up all the way.
And what I really liked about it, what I loved about it, is just how smooth and calm it felt going 0 to 60 and going 75 in third gear. It was like so smooth, and the transition is fantastic from gear to gear, but the suspension is like, it's rock solid. It mm-hmm. doesn't feel, your front end doesn't feel shaky. You know, the wheels don't feel like they're going to slip out, you know, that you're going to lose traction. I don't know what it is about the bike, but it's just so unbelievably solid.
Tune suspension and good weight distribution, probably key.
Oh, it's the best bike I've ever ridden. Out of every bike I've ever been on in my life, that this one has been the best. Not for the automatic, and not just because you can go back and forth from fully manual to fully automatic, because it has six speeds from first to sixth. But you can technically hang out in second gear and start up and start, right? You kind of played with that. It's actually a fully automatic motorcycle, but since the engine doesn't have to idle, you don't have to pull your clutch in every time to stop and start. You can stay in second or third and just leave it in third. You can turn the bike off in second and start up in second. It doesn't really matter. So that's nice. I think that's convenient for city riding, because then you don't have to balance your clutch for traffic. But God, I said there was something about it, felt just so easy to go really fast.
I could get, you know, that bike could get me into some serious trouble.
It was almost too easy, and it was so smooth. I felt like I was on like ice skating, or like, it just didn't feel like there was pavement there.
Yeah, when I ice skate, there's nothing smooth about it, so I can't really share that.
I hate ice skating. I really hate ice skating, but to me, it felt like...
Ever see the movie Bambi? It's kind of like that.
No, that's why I don't ice skate either. No, but for me, as soon as I got it up to highway speed the first time, to me, it felt like that scene in Star Trek, in the new Star Trek movie, in the very beginning, where the kid, you know, young Kirk, is being chased by the police officer on his flying motorcycle, basically. And it was just, all I could hear was the whir and the wind. And it just felt, it almost felt like someone was pulling me, like on a track. Like, it was that smooth.
It's a Brahmo ride at Disneyland.
Exactly, it was a Brahmo ride.
You can't control your own speed, and you can't turn right or left.
It was amazing. Like, I have not felt that way about a bike in a really long time. I mean, I love mine, and I really love riding it, but there's something about that level of riding on that bike that just, like, I just started to laugh. I was like, this is so awesome. I hope this never ends.
And sadly it did. And even then, we ended it a little too late for probably what our...
So big shout out to my boss, Don Lemlin, at Scuderia West in San Francisco, the only Brahmo dealer in the Bay Area. I don't know. I think there's another one in Northern or in Southern California, but I don't know where. We're doing really well with the Impulses. They've been a huge hit. People love them. And now I really know why, because I've ridden that bike around town once, but I never took it on the highway.
Yeah, never had a chance to open it up.
And people will take it on it. Some people are allowed to take demos on it, and they'll go to Stinson. We'll charge it up for them, so they can go all the way out to Stinson and come back. And I've never seen anyone come back unhappy.
For a bike with a nearly $20,000 price point, that is an excellent thing to do. Don, so, I have to say thank you very much for forcing me to take something other than a BMW that Joanne had so nicely procured for me, a similar bike to the one that I ride at home. But instead, Joanne's boss decides, you know what, you're going to go out with two Scuderia bikes, and of course I ride them both and think, vintage what? What, my second bike's got to be like, if I win the lottery, a Brammo Impulse R, or, you know, a 390 when it comes out.
Oh, it was, yeah, it was very lucky. I'm really lucky. I work where I work, and it was awesome. So we'll have photos up. I'm also, I think I'm going to do a little ride review on my blog too. I'll copy it over to our website.
Yeah.
But I just feel like I've got to write that all down, because nobody really knows what a Brammo is. You know, they look at it and they go, what is this?
BMW is going to smell a cheater on me. I'm absolutely certain of it.
Whatever. It's all right. It's okay to cheat on your motorcycle. You know, it's okay to date around, try things out.
Yeah.
You know? But it was, that was awesome. That was the most fun I've had in weeks or months on a bike anyway. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Really awesome. Of course. I think the minute I started riding the KTM, I realized, oh, okay. Not nearly as losing sleep over riding someone else's bike. I have ride other people's bike anxiety.
Oh. We all do.
There's no real reason for it. It's completely irrational, but
no, it's normal. I do. I mean, that's why I didn't ask him about it before. Yeah. I mean, he was asking us, oh, what are you guys going to ride? I'm like, well, I'm going to take the Brammo, and she's going to take her BMW. And I didn't really, I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't trying to strategically steer the conversation. I just was answering his question. And I mean, I have a lot of privileges working there. And
you don't want to push the envelope.
Well,
totally
I try not to, because they're so generous with me, and they're really good to me, and they give me, you know, they lend me things, and I can take bikes out, and there's a lot of privilege there that comes with the job. So I just, you know, I try not to expect that I can get anything I want or anything. And, you know, if it's something really important, I'll ask. But I just figured for this that, you know, I don't know, I didn't, I just was trying not to be selfish.
It was nice that I didn't let you down by dumping a bike right in front of the owner, because that would have been that would have been embarrassing.
Oh, well, that's not as
did
bad.
Did you say she knows how to ride? I thought I saw the M1 stamp on her license.
Whatever. You don't give yourself enough credit, miss. I rode around South America for however long by myself before learning how to ride. You have plenty.
Resume.
You have plenty of experience under your belt. Plenty. More than enough for a lot of people.
Yeah, this will at least give me a little bit more confidence in terms of if someone else offers their bike, I might consider it. But I mean, for me, you know, like I said, it's all about feel, and I sat on actually the Aprilia, the Shiver. I probably would have tested that as well if they would have offered it up. The 690 and the Brammo, they all feel very, to me, stable. Like, I didn't feel like when I sit on the 1200 GS, that bike is overwhelming to me. I'm not ready for it.
Well, that's definitely a different purposed bike. I mean,
sure, absolutely.
Just the bikes, the street bikes that KTM offers, that Aprilia offers.
Huge tank, lots of gas.
Brammo offers. They're just
chest level for me sitting. So it's much higher.
Tell me about it. Okay, hello.
Yeah, for you, head level. That's
why I don't like the Shiver. So Aprilia makes a twin 750. Naked sport bike called the Shiver, and you probably haven't heard of it because there's no such thing as Aprilia Island in MotoGP. You know, the marketing for Aprilia isn't nearly as aggressive as Ducati, so you're not really familiar with it. Everyone knows the Monster. No one knows what a Shiver is. It's a great competitor to it, but I don't think it competes as well because it is a little more top-heavy for someone like me, whereas on a Monster, it's great for short people because even though you're a little bit shorter, the distribution of weight is really nice. And it doesn't feel, they don't feel very heavy. Whereas the Shiver just feels like I'm carrying a sack of potatoes in front of me.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, it's basically a modern or a more updated SV with more power, more torque, engine mapping. So you can actually have road mode, sport, and rain. So it has all these great features. And it's a fantastic bike for highway riding, for touring, because it's just a little bit heavier and more stable. And it performs really well at highway speed. So you probably would like it because it's a twin. But it's, I personally would never buy one. I would shell out for a 690 Duke, but I wouldn't shell out for a Shiver. because at least the 690 weighs a lot less. And the center of gravity and the distribution of weight is better. Like, I think Aprilia could rejigger. Well, you saw that tank. It's like...
It did feel that different to me, though, between the Aprilia and the KTM.
I guess for me, as a shorter person where...
Yeah, well, I didn't ride it. I just sat on it.
Even sitting on it, for me, it feels... Because I'm closer to the tank than you are, that's probably why I feel it. That's where... Most of us who are really short, that's where we feel it. Is this because as soon as we reach over the tank, if it feels like I've got an armful of tank, then it just feels really overwhelming. And I don't want to ride like this. Whereas I sit on my bike and it's half that because the tank is skinnier, but the engine is lower. It's just mounted, arranged differently. It's still a twin, but it's rejiggered differently. So it's all... It's a lot lower, like down here. Like, so when you sit on a Shiver, it's like me sitting on an SV. It's just not arranged comfortably, and I don't immediately feel good about it, right? Whereas the Brahmo and the Duke, it's like, I can do this easy. I took the Shiver out, and I rode around the block a few times, and it was fun, but it's not my preference, you know? It's like, I'd rather go to
Joanne's criteria for whether or not she's going to like a bike, is it a bear hug or a good hug?
Exactly. That's... Pretty much. It's like, do you want to carry a basket full of laundry down the stairs? Or do you want to carry a small bowl of fruit? You know, like, I don't want to... It's just unnerving. And I think, you know, short people, you know what I'm talking about. Shorter, you have to... It feels like you have to handle more bike because you're closer to the largest part of the bike. And it just depends on the bike. I mean... Like, we have scooters that, we have like two scooters that are 50 pounds different in weight, but the heavier one feels lighter than the lighter one because of the way the two companies arranged their scooters. And bikes are very similar. There's some bikes that, you know, one weighs 50 pounds less than the other, but you would never know that because, like a BMW, right? BMWs seem like they're balanced pretty well. Like, an F650 is pretty skinny and... Like, when I rode one, I thought, well, this doesn't weigh, it doesn't feel like it weighs anything close to what they say it does, and it felt great. So it's just all about, you know, that distribution of weight for me is, like, you know, where it really matters.
Yeah. In terms of current news affairs related to motorcyclists, there is a bill currently in Congress that's hoping to halt E15 fuel sales. E15 is the terminology used to describe the percent by volume of ethanol. So that would be up to 15% of volume ethanol in 1 gallon of gas that you buy at the service station. Okay. And this is actually a United States-wide, not just a California issue. And basically, by continuing to add a higher percentage of ethanol, you not only restrict the amount of vehicles that can fuel up using that percentage, it has not been cleared for use on recreational vehicles and motorcycles, but you also decrease the amount of energy you can, say, get from your gasoline. So it might be cleaner burning, but you're getting fewer bang for your buck, if you will, simply because 1 gallon of gas is equivalent to 1.5 gallons of ethanol. So by adding up to 15% volume, you're actually decreasing the amount of energy that you're getting out of the gas. As far as motorcycles are concerned, they have not done a lot of research on how increasing the percentage of ethanol affect the engines in long term. And that pretty much goes for cars as well. Cars are basically designed... Initially, obviously, things have changed over time, but initially we're designed for no additive, no oxygenate. So by introducing ethanol, you do run the risk of having degradation of certain elastomers, seals, hoses, O-rings in your engine. Ethanol also breaks down into some percentage of water. So all of these factors have encouraged people, and of course the AMA also lobbying for us motorcyclists, to stop the approval of moving forward with the 15% by volume and doing more research long-term so we can determine whether or not this would be dangerous for car users as well as motorcycle users. You really don't want to run into problems with fuel when you kind of have other worries on your mind when you're on the freeway.
Mm, true.
So that's our current event.
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't know. I certainly do want to try to get everybody on, I guess, the most environmentally friendly fuels, if there is such a thing. I can see why they want to do it, you know, but I don't know how much that would really affect us, I guess. I guess we'll have to see if that'll really, like, hurt our vehicles. I mean, for now,
I think there's... In terms of ethanol affecting vehicles, I can tell you that when we traveled through Brazil, mm-hmm. Their ethanol percentage is somewhere closer to like 100%, 80s, and that definitely did some damage to some folks' bikes that I was traveling with, where the bike would constantly have knocking problems, breaking down.
10 to 90 is a huge jump.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They have almost all ethanol percentages, but their vehicles are specifically designed for that purpose, to run on that fuel. You can't just take your Nissan Pathfinder and drop 100% ethanol in it and expect it to not have some drama.
Oh, got
internally.
It. I see. Well, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, so that's one of our current events, and I guess you could say another happy current event is the fact that the AMA has elected a woman to chair.
Yay, Maggie.
Maggie McNally was elected chair of the board of directors of the American Motorcyclist Association, which is the first time in 70-something years, 89-year history of the AMA.
Yeah, it's long overdue. That's cool. Can't wait to see. It'd be nice to see some updates to something, you know, to even just the AMA magazine. Like, I don't read that magazine because I've looked at it, and every time I look through articles, you know, by any female contributors, there's hardly ever any. I don't know, content-wise, there's nothing in there that ever interests me, and I've only seen one woman on the front of the cover, ever, and that was still with a man, because I think it was Jody Perowitz and her father together, which is great, but, like, surely there are more than 1% of AMA members that are women. Can we have some female contribution to content? But, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see, like, what kind of changes maybe she can make, or improvements, or I don't know, maybe a better conference, women's conference the next time around, or who knows what, but it's great.
I can certainly tell you that BMW Ownership News magazine has made a concerted effort, at least in terms of the review section, to have more women reviewers, because they have tapped me to review some boots, some CD boots, which I'm currently taking a look at and use today. So I'm pretty happy about that. And
nice transition to
gear.
Discuss some gear topics. So you're reviewing the CD Fusion boots.
Correct.
Also. And you wore those today. Yeah. And it sounds like you have some more break-in to do before you can review them. Let them break before you, if you can.
I've kind of worked it out with first impressions. And
trust me, it took me a while, and I was in a lot of pain in the beginning. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to review these things, because my feet hurt.
Yeah.
And I was pretty much going to give up on them. Like, I got to send these back, because I can't review them if my feet hurt. But I stuck with it. And once I got through the break-in, it was
fine. I fortunately do not have that problem.
Yeah, I was really worried, but thank God I got through that portion of it. So, awesome. We'll look forward to that.
But no, I think the more important thing to bring up about gear today is Revit.
Our friends at Revit. Thank you, Revit, for generously offering to let Christy review one of two new women's jackets. I think we mentioned that in the last episode, the new summer textile, the Levante. So you'll see in our photos today, sexy photos of Christy wearing that jacket. So that'll be hopefully in the next couple months after you get some seat time in that.
Yeah.
And then I won't have my next Revit review until probably June, because I will get the other jacket in May, because they're just a little behind. So in the next few months, we'll have some more reviews for you. But what I do get to try sooner It sounds like May, beginning of May. Well, I guess a little sooner is the new Shoebirth C3 Pro for women, which, by the way, is identical to the C3 Pro for men, except in the fitment, the internal fitment. And it's really just the padding fitment, the cheek padding, that's in the interior headliner that's fitted just a little bit differently. And the color options are a little bit different as well. You can still get the standard C3 women, but they just decided to offer this pro version. And that's the one I get to try. I also get to try it in pearl pink. If you've seen, did you see the creamy one, the regular pearl white one, right? What'd you think of that color?
It was all right.
Yeah. It's like just a soft creamy color with some fleck in the paint. So it's like kind of a, not sparkly, but this is not a flat paint. So they asked me to please review the pink one. I agreed, even though I am not a pink person. So, you know, with the 769 big ones or 699 or whichever model you choose of your Shoebirth, you know, you do get quite a bit for your money. You get this wonderful warranty, and you also get their fancy mobility program, which is really great if you have to replace your helmet. The same model, actually. It only applies to the model you bought. You have to register your helmet pre-register your helmet when you buy the helmet. And then if you crash in your helmet within 3 years of owning the helmet, you can replace the same model for 1/3 of the current retail price within 1 year of the crash. And that's, again, within the first 3 years of owning the helmet. That's really nice. That's something I don't think anyone else offers as far as helmets go. Arai doesn't offer that. Showy doesn't offer that. So you get, you know, a nice big discount if you crash in your helmet in the first 3 years. Make sure you save a copy of your receipt when you buy your Shoebirth. So that's just one, you know, one of the many perks of owning a higher-end helmet like the Shoebirth. I will have a much more detailed review as far as, you know, how quiet is it really, and you know, can you even really notice that difference, certainly at highway speed and all that good stuff, and certainly the fitment, since I'll be getting the women's version of the Pro. It does have a slight fit difference, so I think that should be, I'm looking forward to that. So probably end of May, maybe early June, I'll have a review for that. So I also wanted to just talk a little bit about the Aerostitch pop-up store that I went to last week. They were here for like 10 days in San Francisco for about, you know, like a week and a half to share all their suits and, you know, measure you, do repairs, answer your questions, you know, see new product. One new option that Aerostitch has finally decided to offer after many, 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 many years of fitting women in the men's suits is to provide women's sizes, because when you buy an Aerostitch, you're not really getting, so to speak, a custom suit in the true sense like you would a one-piece leather race suit that's all cut to measure. You know, you, like if you buy a suit from Vanson or RS Tai Chi or Dainese, they measure you and they cut the suit to your measurements. That's not really how Aerostitch works. You order the size that, you know, matches you closely, and then they have all these alterations that they offer. Let's see, 21 different alteration zones on your body that they can make, which is great because then they can tweak the fit, you know, quite well. Everything from under the armpits, you know, gussets at the waist, gussets at the hip, length in the knees, you know, all kinds of little add-ons. So the alterations certainly help. But for women, unfortunately, the off-the-rack sizing starts at 6, and I think they top out at 16. So if you're a 0 or a 2 or a 4, you have to go down to a men's 34 regular and then request the alterations that you want. It's not totally custom in that sense, but it'll get you closer. And so the main difference is that when they cut the suits out, they're not going to use, you know, assuming your size 6 and up, they're not going to use a men's form. They're going to use a woman's pattern form to cut out that size. And that hopefully will be a huge increase or a huge difference in the fit and the way that it works. They haven't really made very many of these yet, so they just started taking orders, and I think they're figuring out what's going to work and what isn't. So, you know, if you got a woman's suit from them, send us some photos. I'd love to see if it worked out for you or not. I think, you know, if you're looking for a one piece, the Aerostitch is there for you, but if you want a two-piece, trust me, there are many, many, many other options than a two-piece Aerostitch. I think that's really not why you would go to Aerostitch anyway, is for a two-piece. So you'll have way more to choose from if you are shopping for a traditional two-piece textile or leather, if you look outside of Aerostitch. So I hope it works out really well for them. I know they're trying their best to make this work for women. And it's going to be a lot of trial and error for them to figure out what works and what doesn't. So, you know, we'd love to see if it works for you. I had a great time today. Awesome.
Indeed. Thank you very much for...
That was so fun. I can't wait to post pictures.
For that opportunity. Thanks to Dawn again.
Yeah, huge thanks there. And who else?
For trusting that I wouldn't dump his bike.
Oh, I have to thank my husband because he took all the pictures.
Our crew photographer.
My photographer, cinematographer, videographer.
Sound engineer.
Sound engineer. He's a
barista.
He's an all-in-one. He's a barista. He makes my coffee. All-in-one genius, web genius.
Photo bomber.
He's also a photo bomber. You have to go see my Instagram photo. It's great. And if you ever need web development consulting, you'll have to visit him at smldg.com. Small dog, but without the vowels. And he can help you with all your web development and video needs. So I have to give a big thanks to my husband. Yeah. So thanks for listening. We will see you next week. Hopefully we'll get this episode up by Monday at the latest. And you can always reach us at moterrific.com. You can email us moterrific@gmail.com. And then, of course, you can find each of us on our usual Facebook and Twitter feeds. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.